Reed's Ranch is proud to partner with Marcos Garza and the Garza Law Firm. Before you say guilty, say Garza, East Tennessee's premier DUI defense lawyer. They also handle criminal defense and personal injury. If you need legal representation, go to the team you can trust the most in East Tennessee. Online, 24/7, 365. You can chat with somebody for more information at GarzaLaw.com. You can call 24/7, 365 and get someone on the phone at 865-540-8300. Marcos and his team have been representing East Tennessee for a long, long time. You see their commercials. You see their billboards. They're in the community. They're doing good things. And we appreciate for them sponsoring the podcast and their support. GarzaLaw.com. Before you say guilty, say Garza. Let's get to the episode. First 20 minutes or so, or really first 10 minutes about last night's game against Florida in basketball. Then we switch to some Louisville and Bruce talk for about another 10 minutes before switching back to the basketball game. And then we talk some Josh Heupel year one anniversary around the 35-minute mark.
I mean, this is the last stand.
You're listening to The Unfiltered.
Well, I hate to say I told you so.
There's nothing to be done besides to get on Twitter and tweet to all my dumbass followers.
But I told you so.
Hey, I told you so.
The controversial.
He's a dumbass.
He can't do math.
He's an idiot.
He gets his haircut at Walmart. Look at that shitty haircut.
The realest podcast in the Southeast.
Let the dogs loose. Let the goons be goons. 11 in a row. 11 in a row. 11 in a row.
Enough.
38 in a row. As in 38 unanswered points when we were whipping that ass.
Ranch Gang, stand up. The holy war is upon us. Welcome to Reed's Ranch, the podcast with Seth Hughes.
Like, just quit acting like this is any fun at all.
Another edition of Reed's Ranch, Thursday, January 27th. Sorry for not getting one out last week. It was busy around here for both of us. Seth Hughes joins me down in Alabama. What's up, Seth?
Not much, John. Happy to be here.
Feel better about the basketball team after the last 2 weeks. I'm glad we didn't talk last week. We might have been pretty down in the dumps.
Yeah. Yeah, they answered the Kentucky game. They've answered post-Kentucky pretty well, as well as we could have hoped for. I mean, I think that winning at Vandy is never easy unless they're like that 0-18 team.
We've done it a lot recently, but it's never really easy. Even the year we were ranked number one, we had to have Grant Williams score, what, 46 points? Something crazy like that?
A lot, and I mean, I remember the refs kind of gave us some help at the end of that game. You know, so that was like, I think that that's like a good win on the road there in that particular arena. Then we finally exercised some demons against LSU. I actually, after the LSU game, I felt like that it wouldn't have mattered if Xavier Pinson played. Like, they weren't going to beat us, you know.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch a second of the Tennessee-LSU game. I haven't seen really one highlight of it. I was having my sports fandom crushed, my dreams crushed, much to the delight of a couple of shitheads, but the Titans let me down. So I didn't see any of the LSU game, so I'll take your word on the Pinson thing.
You know, I felt like my only gripe about the LSU game is the last 5 minutes of the first half. And I wish I had, like, written down the lineup that we had with that last 5 minutes. But it was truly atrocious. I mean, we let them come back in the game, and I remember, like, they cut it to, like, two or whatever, and I just looked at my sister, and I said, Tennessee's going to lose this game. Like, what is he doing with this lineup? It included Meshack. I believe Urosh was also out there. It was a truly atrocious lineup, and I, like, was telling like either my dad or somebody else, I was like, how much do we think this lineup has even practiced together? Because I guarantee you it's very, very minimal. It was a truly atrocious lineup. But they ended up winning big over LSU, completely just clamped down on them. And then I did not get to watch the game last night. I got to watch like the first like 5 minutes. I got to see Appleby bank in that three in the first half, and then I had to leave for my mom's birthday. So I didn't get to watch any of it, but, I mean, we clamped down on them in the second half, and they didn't do anything in the second half on offense.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, stats by Will, game preview, really painting the picture that, like, Florida is going to try to shoot a bunch of threes but can't really hit them, and that they are good at forcing turnovers. And in the first half, it was a worst-case scenario where Tennessee – I mean, I think we went like a 5 or 6 minute period where we didn't even get a shot off, it seemed like. And Florida's throwing up just complete bullshit shots that are going in, and then that kind of leveled out in the second half. Go ahead, sorry.
Tennessee had 7 straight possessions with a turnover last night.
Yeah, so I'd say that's about a 4 or 5 minute streak.
So, like, Jonathan Toy texted me this morning, and he said, you know, like, if Tennessee would just cut out the 5 minutes a game where they lose their minds on offense. And I'm thinking of, you know, the 7 straight possession with a turnover, that last 5 minutes against LSU in the first half. Like, they would be, like, a really good basketball team. But, like, those, like, stretches that we do where we just, like, we lose our minds offensively. You know, last night, 7 straight possessions with a turnover.
No timeout from Rick Barnes. I believe Florida, I want to say it got to maybe a 15-0 run. No timeout. That's frustrating. You know, we've talked about that ad nauseum over the last, you know, handful of years, just his refusal to try to stop a run. I thought that Candy Chandler would be that guy that could stop a run himself by getting to the rim and either getting to the free throw line or finishing a layup or creating a look. And obviously in these games with these droughts, that hasn't necessarily happened. I will say in the second half, we played pretty good offense, and I don't recall really any long stretches without points. So, you know, it was only one half of a drought this year, or, you know, yesterday for the game. And, you know, some of the losses, it's been, you know, stretches in both halves where you've had that happen.
Yeah, it's been full games.
Yeah, I mean, against Texas Tech.
But, so I, like I said, I didn't get to watch any last night. Like, the LSU game, like, my only gripe about it was the last 5 minutes of the first half. Just an absolutely abysmal lineup. He's obviously going to play Meshack, which at least he is right now.
He only got 2 minutes last night, and he is terrified to shoot the basketball. Like, I like his energy, but last night, like, it was he was put in the game whenever Tennessee was on their drought, and, you know, the ball gets swung around. He passed up an open three, passed up dribble in two dribbles and take a shot, and he tried to get too deep and pass it, and then the shot clock went off. And then I don't think we really saw him again after that.
He seems to bring absolutely nothing offensively.
So. He's a young Pons. Now, keep in mind, remember how bad Pons was on offense his first 2 years?
Yeah, he didn't do anything.
He couldn't do anything at all.
But here they are. They're sitting 14-5. Like, as much as this team has infuriated me, I mean, like, there have been points where I have hated this team, where I have barely watched. I mean, we talked, like, the South Carolina game. Like, you read a book. Like, I got in the shower. I cooked dinner. Like, they've been horrible to watch at times. They're sitting at 14-5, and I looked this up this morning. The 2018 team that was the 3 seed that we all loved was 14-5 as well, going into a road game in the SEC Big 12 Challenge.
Oh, wow. Okay. How about Seth Hughes doing some stats and research? Look at him.
Lenardi has us as the very top-ranked 4 seed.
Where did Lenardi have us in 2018?
I couldn't tell you that. I think we're like 14th in KenPom right now, and Texas is like 15th. I mean, like, I expect.
Yeah, we are one spot ahead of them, and I believe like LSU and Texas Tech are right there as well, like in a like 4 teams in a row.
So, you know, I expect Saturday night to be a battle. I watched some of the Texas TCU game the other night. Texas looked really good. I know they've looked really bad to the point they've totally fallen out of the rankings, but they looked pretty good against TCU. And it was a blowout. They got so up over TCU, I turned it to another game because I didn't want to watch a blowout. But, I mean, I expect it to be a battle. Like, Tennessee's got a chance. That team in 2017, they were 14-5 as well, and they ran off like a 5-game win streak to go to 19-5. So that, you know, Tennessee has a chance. This team has a chance as well to, you know, really reel off some wins here. and, you know, get to that same spot. They could, you know, if you beat Texas, then you got A&M at home, and then you're at South Carolina. The South Carolina game apparently is on CBS for some reason. That surely isn't right. But, you know, Tennessee could be 18-5, 19-5, 20-5 when they get to host Kentucky. Everything is still in front of the everything is still in front of them for this Tennessee team. It's not like Alabama, who's reeling and has three straight games of Baylor, Auburn, Kentucky.
18-7, I think I'd be okay with that too, you know, over the next five.
Yeah, I would too.
And 20-5 would be cool, but 18-7, that'd be good. And you know,
yeah, I don't expect to go 20-5. I mean, I don't expect to go 20-5. I don't think it will be easy to win at Starkville.
I don't think it's going to be easy to win on Saturday either. I mean, I would imagine Texas is going to be favored on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think we'll win on Saturday either. But if they were to, I mean, it would be another feather in the cap for Tennessee.
They're going to have a good resume. Like you said, they're probably going to hang around a 4 seed. If it goes bad, maybe a 5 seed. But I wouldn't think it'd get much lower than that with their resume. So that's good. You talked about Auburn. You buying Bruce Pearl to Louisville at all?
So I read I don't know what people said. The only thing I have read about it is the ESPN article on Louisville's coaching search today. And they mentioned like Pearl. I think Pearl was the second name they mentioned after Mick Cronin. And it was that like, I think he said people close to the program had told him that Pearl was a non-starter because of the NCAA issues.
Well, that's what I would think. I did not see the Mick Cronin name, by the way. That would be pretty funny.
And the myriad NCAA issues that Louisville has had, so it would be a non-starter. Then he also went on, which I didn't really care much about any of them, but Pearl and Oates.
Can you imagine?
And Oates.
Can you imagine if Mick Cronin went from UCLA to Louisville? Like, is he just going to get all the big-time jobs? That guy, that little weasel?
Yeah, who plays just a dreadful style of basketball. I think the issue is he was an assistant at Louisville for 3 years. Like, who cares?
Yeah, you're a Louisville, bro. You have the highest revenue in the sport by far. I believe like Louisville makes $9 million more off basketball than anyone else.
Which is crazy.
Like, you're Louisville. You're a top 6 or 7 job easily. You don't hire Mick Cronin just because he was an assistant there. Although, you know, he's been pretty good at UCLA, so whatever.
That was Borzello's first name on the list, which is crazy to me. I think that like the first name on the list has to be Bruce Pearl. But I also think it would be crazy for Louisville to hire Bruce Pearl because of the NCAA issues. I don't know. Like I said, the only thing I was really curious about was Pearl and Oates. Oates, Borzello said that Oates' buyout makes him a non-starter as well. His buyout is like $12.6 million.
Although they did save $8 million. Chris Mack gave him $8 million back.
Yeah. So I just, you know, I would love for them to hire one of those two guys. Will Warren also brought up to me today. Like, it would be funny if they hired Will Wade. That would also be funny.
Well, that to me, like, if Bruce Pearl's a non-starter because of NCAA stuff, you would think Will Wade would be as well.
Yeah.
He hasn't been, like, fully exonerated, right? I mean, I know nothing's happened yet. But
no. Nothing's happened. It's still open. Where I guess as with Auburn, it is finished. They got the one season. They had the one season postseason ban last year.
And then one of their coaches went to prison, so.
Yeah. So.
Do you think Bruce would want that job?
That's what I was going to say. Like, I was going to ask you that.
There's a part of me that thinks, like, he's just, like, the way he's reaching out to Louisville and letting everyone know how interested he is just him, I guess, angling for a king's ransom from Auburn. But you would think he would already have all that control right now. Like, you would think he would be above having to do this for them. You would think they'd be willing to make him maybe the highest paid basketball coach in the country because, like, who's bigger than him right now? I mean, I know, like, right now he's the number one coach in the country and number one team in the country, but, like, is Calipari still more powerful and, like, famous than Bruce Pearl at this point? If so, like, is there anyone else besides Calipari? Because Coach K is gone. Roy Williams is gone.
I would say Cal has more power at Kentucky than Auburn just because it's a, you know, I mean, they really, really care about basketball at Kentucky, but I mean, Pearl probably can. I mean, Pearl, they told what? A couple years ago, they told Pearl that he had to suspend himself. He had to sit out some games or he had to fire an assistant coach or whatever it was. And he just told him no. He said, no, I'm not doing it. He told his athletic director and the school administrators that he just wasn't going to do it. And he went back out there and kept coaching. and nothing happened. They didn't do anything to him. Like, yeah, I would think he could do whatever he wanted, Auburn. I mean, I don't know what he makes a year.
I don't know either. I would imagine he's somewhere. I mean, he's getting paid at least like what Rick Barnes is getting paid, right? You would think.
I would think. I mean, he makes $3.9 million.
Never mind. I guess he's not.
What does Rick make? Like, Rick makes over like $5 million, right?
Which is laughable when you say it.
I mean, maybe it's like, maybe Pearl actually does want to, like, take that next step and be at a Blue Blood finally and, like, be in the NBA arena. And
back in the NBA arena, because, I mean, that's what he had at Tennessee. Like, that's where I keep coming back to is, like, if I'm Pearl, there is a part of me that thinks he probably has, like, a big chip on his shoulder and he wants to tell everyone, like, to fuck off because, you know, he's been left for dead, you know, almost twice now. And he could be at a job that, I mean, I don't know if Louisville's a blue blood, but if they're not, they're right on the doorstep of it. Like, I mean, he would be at the most, you know, wealthy program. He would be, you know, getting, I would imagine, top three money to go to Louisville. They'd have to break the bank for him. And again, I think him at Louisville would put him in position to be the biggest star in college basketball. It might be hard for him to be bigger than Calipari like now, but if he got to Louisville and they're going head-to-head and they're rivals, like he would be 1A, 1B at least.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's impossible for either one of us to say because we're not like close to Pearler. But like to me, just from looking at how the season has gone, Oates makes more sense than Pearl does to leave. Like because this season has just gone poorly for Alabama. Like, it's not gone anything like they had hoped. And, you know, I mean, it's Alabama. It's never going to be, you know, and not that basketball's ever going to be bigger than football at Auburn, but it's not Alabama football at
Auburn.
Well,
I was going to ask, like, is Auburn, if you're them, do you just make the transition? Because, like, hey, you've obviously gotten your ass kicked mostly in college football. I know they've beaten Alabama a couple times, but like, you're the only other team in the country.
No, they don't. They don't. They will never.
You're the only other team in the country that has to, you know, play the two best teams in the country. Like, it's Tennessee and Auburn. That's it. That's the only two teams that have to play Georgia and Alabama every year. So, like, I wonder if they're just like, you know what? Let's just take basketball. Let's just enjoy Bruce. This Brian Harsin guy, he's not getting us back anywhere.
They'll never do that. They'll never do that. they'll never do that. The mental issues that they have with Alabama, it will never allow them to not be deeply tied to football. I mean, it's just there's too many mental issues that they have being in the same state as Alabama.
Okay. I just didn't know if there was a point where they would be, you know what, let's just maybe like this college basketball thing's fun and if football works out, it'll be okay.
No. I mean, I think that they're always going to be football people, which, I mean, Tennessee is too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I just don't think they would ever just transition. Like, I don't know. It just makes more sense. I could see it out of Oates more like this season has just gone so poorly and he could reset. He's still so young. He would never have to take another job. He has little kids and they could live in Louisville, you know, for the rest of their lives at a basketball school and he could do, he could win national titles at Louisville. It just seems to make more sense to me. But if his, you know, it's weird that we hear all about how much money Louisville has and how much money they make, and they're the most profitable basketball school in the country. And I don't doubt this at all. But if they are, then like a $12 million buyout doesn't matter, especially when you just saved $8 million.
And you, like I said, you generate by far the most.
So like, just go hire.
I don't want to say you have to hire like a star on your next one, but like you're getting dangerously close to just being another program for, you know, the extended period of time. Like you got to find somebody to kind of recreate that magic, I would say. I don't know how loyal, I mean, take that back, not loyal, but I just don't know how much patience Louisville has at basketball.
Their fans are insane.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you know, they compare themselves to Kentucky and, You know, I know Kentucky fans are insane, so I don't know much about Louisville basketball fans, but it seems like
they're awful to be around. They're atrocious. They do this awful cards chant where they spell it out with their hands, and like, I've been around Louisville basketball fans twice in my life, like around them a lot. The last time was when we lost to them in the NCAA tournament. They were in the Birmingham Regional 2 those first two rounds, and I went, and there was this dude beside me and my dad that kept an unlit cigar in his mouth the entire time in the BJCC. And he did the cards chant and yelled the whole game. I mean, they were a 3 seed. They're playing like a 14 seed. Like, who gives, like, who cares? And, like, they're crazy. They're insane. They're very annoying. The other time I was around them was at a Conference USA basketball tournament, and the dude turned around and just waylaid this Cincinnati fan, just decked him across the face. I mean, they're awful people. They're terrible. They're just as bad as Kentucky fans, probably even worse because they have such a, I imagine they have like a little brother complex like Auburn fans do with Alabama.
I think of Louisville, Kentucky more like Duke and UNC is kind of what I would, maybe more so than Alabama and Auburn, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, but like no matter what Louisville does, they're never going to be able to match up with the splendor and prestige of Kentucky basketball.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So I guess that comparison's pretty good then.
You know, like, it sucks, but, like, Kentucky basketball is, like, it is what it is, you know? I mean, and, like, Louisville has a lot to be proud of as a program. I mean, like, Mac was, like, the first one to, like, never win a championship of any sort, I think, since, like, from, like, 80 years or something crazy I read. Like, I mean, what a doofus move that was by him to leave Xavier.
I would call it a doofus move, but, I mean, I feel like you got to take the Louisville job. And I don't know. They got to number one in the country in the COVID year.
Yeah, he did win the ACC that year.
They were like preseason number one. I don't know like where they finished the season.
They came in second.
Like, I don't know if like that would have, if they would have maybe made a Elite Eight or Final Four. Like, I don't know if we remember this differently if COVID doesn't stop it. But they were really good that year, right?
Yeah, they were. Apparently, they went 24-7 overall, 15-5 in conference, and were second in the
ACC. I guess
they
finished 14th in the final poll, so, I mean, I guess they had came down a little bit. But, like, they were a preseason top five team, got to number one, finished at 14. Maybe they make a run there. Maybe this goes differently. But then there's that weird story of him getting, like, extorted by his coach.
By Dino Gaudio.
Yeah, and then, like, him trying to, like, get back at him without telling the university. And it was just a really weird story. But, yes, in hindsight, you are right. It's like he could have been a king at Xavier.
Yeah, I mean, this is alma mater. He had just gotten them a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, I mean, just sometimes, I guess, like, I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree with it about the Louisville job. It's like, sometimes the grass isn't greener on the other side, and, like, he obviously should have stayed at Xavier. He didn't have it cut out for Louisville. Yeah, I kind of hope they hire Nate Oates, though. I mean,
Mac was the 10th highest paid coach at Louisville. He was making $3.8 million, just behind Big Fred Hoiberg. Who is robbing Nebraska blonde.
Like, I looked it up the other, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, Fred Hoiberg, he was, like, at that point, like, 2 weeks ago, he was 5-40 in the Big Ten. So, he is 5-42 in the Big Ten through 2.5 seasons. He has won 20 total games at Nebraska and lost 58. He is only 49 years old. And from Lincoln, Nebraska, he grew up in Lincoln. Like, you know, I mean, like, he is, you know, he's a Nebraska guy. Like, yeah, he played at Iowa State and coached at Iowa State, but, like, they have Fred Hoiberg and Scott Frost. And if you had told them that 5 years ago, those were their two coaches for basketball and football, they would think that Nebraska football would be back and Nebraska basketball would be making the NCAA tournament every year. And instead, Fred Hoiberg is 5-42 in conference.
It is weird just because in college basketball, we know that, like, coaches, if you're a good coach, you usually can have some success. It's not like football where it's basically 50-50 no matter who you are.
Yeah.
It does seem like basketball is a little bit easier. And, you know, Chris Mack, Fred Hoiberg, Shaka Smart, all three guys that just kind of fell apart. Now, Shaka, brother Shaka, is up there balling at Marquette right now. But
they are good.
Yeah, they're back to actually playing, like, good Shaka Smart type of basketball.
Yeah, they're very good. That was a big win they had last night on the road.
You think we beat Texas this weekend or no?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that, like, as disappointing as their season has been, like, this is a big home game. You know, it's they can kind of, you know, right some wrongs that they've had and, you know, put together a performance to, you know, to kind of just get the bad taste out of their mouth is kind of how I see it. And I don't think Rick coming back really matters to anybody playing. But for Texas, I mean, they were preseason top five, right?
Yeah, they're number five preseason.
And, you know, I mean, they've fallen out of the top 25. I mean, they've been bad. So, no, I don't see us winning it. I mean, it's a tough ask. It would be a sweet win.
I thought, you know, last night, I know you didn't watch much of it, but Tennessee, I think they kind of had to go with their small ball lineup for a couple reasons. I thought that, you know, Florida playing five out and shooting a bunch of threes combined with Uroš Plavichuk losing his mind. He got like a bad technical. He was buying in a little too much to the Tiger King thing. He was buying a little too much into being the enforcer thing. He got like one of the dumbest technicals you'll ever see, just him shoving a guy in the back on a free throw. So he only played 9 minutes. But I did think Barnes did a pretty good job with the rotations last night. Some big positives, I thought. I thought Fulkerson came up big in the, you know, second half. It was nice to see him have some confidence. I thought that, obviously, Vescovi, clearly our best player. I don't want to say on both ends of the court, but he's a good defender, and he is our best offensive player right now.
And he is the, like, you know, he is the one guy that, like, every single night, you know exactly what you're going to get out of him. Like, you know, I mean, he is the, in SEC play, he's not scored lower than 13
points. I was going to say, he is just very consistent, double digits, usually at least the mid-teens. I mean, basically, yeah, like you said, since SEC play, what's this, 13, 17, 14, 14, 20, 14, 16, 23, he is going to get you there, and he is going to get, you know, sometimes as far as Tennessee's concerned, he's going to get you probably 25% of your points, at least.
Yeah. You know, he's now shooting 40% from three.
He's shooting 57% his last four games from three. He's on fire the last four games.
Like, there, you know, like, there were some, I mean, like, I think, like, going into this week's games, like, in conference play, like, he was, like, tied for, like, he was, like, tied with Jabari Smith for defensive rebounds per game. Like, you know, he is extremely tough. He plays as hard as he possibly can. You know, nobody can ever question his effort, and you know exactly what you're going to get from him every single night that they go out there. Just looking at, like, some of the stats from last night, like, Josiah played the entire 20 minutes of the second half.
Yeah, I was going to say, Josiah played, you know, 38 of the 40 minutes. So, like, I know he still had his, you know, bad night shooting from the field, but the three he did hit, Seth, you would have loved. It was a line drive that pushed Tennessee up from 1-4. It was a line drive. It was a good shot. It was confident. He came up and he got it done. And then, 9 points, 9 rebounds, and, you know, his typical good defense.
Like, 4 assists, right? He had, like, 4 assists.
Well, you know, Tennessee did a good job in general. I want to say they had, what, 5 guys with at least 3 assists? And Powell had 2 himself. So, like, Tennessee, you know, had a bunch of guys being able to create, which I think is a positive improvement. Like, Powell's putting the ball on the floor a little bit more. And, like, you know, Kumwa even had 3 assists.
Powell's had some really good passes of late.
Yeah, no, he had one last night in a big situation down 4 where...
To Vescovi.
Vescovi, by the way. Vescovi. Where he went baseline, then, you know, with a left-handed pass, just put it around the money for a corner three that I think cut us to a 1-point deficit.
He just knows how to play basketball.
And I'm glad that he's no longer competing with, you know, for minutes right now. He's comfortable at least getting his 20 minutes a game, it seems like.
Yeah. He had a great pass to Kamwa one game last week. I think it was the LSU game. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like Ziegler provided a big spark last night coming in off the bench and hitting those back-to-back threes, including banking one from the corner.
Yeah, he missed it so bad it banked in, although he did not miss it as bad as Florida's player did at the end of the game. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Before he shot off the damn top of the backboard from the corner. I felt bad for him when that happened.
Tennessee's offense is definitely, it's getting better. I mean, for one, they scored over 70 points last night.
4 in the second half? That's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, they scored over 70 points in a win last night in the SEC. So that's an obvious, like, marked improvement. Like, Josiah is always going to do some things that, like, drive you insane. But
he's vital, though, whenever it comes to just the lineups. Like, you need his versatility out there.
It's like you can't, like, you know, he had 9-9-4. Like, if we could get that every night, I would take that right now.
Oh, for sure. Like, if Tennessee is going to make any type of run this season or in the postseason, like, Josiah has to be on the court and, you know, contributing at least like that 9-9-4 you're talking about.
You know, and it's like against LSU, I know you didn't watch any of it. Like, he, you know, at the very beginning of the game, it was a beautiful play. They kicked him for a three. He drained it. He drained two threes really early in the game. And I don't know that he hit another three against LSU. He might have just hit those two, but it was like they were at the...
I think he was 2 of 6, yeah.
But it was like, you know, for the rest of the game, they had to think about it at least. Like, he has to be able to... He has to take the shot from three because they leave him open.
Last night he wasn't open. Last night he was covered and he just drained it. I think we were running out of time on the shot clock, but he rose up and hit it. Line drive.
He always takes, like, they're pretty shots, you know? I mean, it's a good form. Like, I wish he would drive more. Like, I wish he could, like, drive. I wish he could slash, man. Like, you talking about, like, how much better we're doing creating. Like, if he could slash, it would really be nice. But he just doesn't do it. But, you know, 9-9-4, you can't complain about that. He played, what, 38 minutes of the game, you said?
Was, you know, he was always constantly switching out and having to be the closeout guy on three. So, I thought he was really good. I thought everyone was really good except, you know, Chandler got a little sloppy with the ball, a little disappointed in him, missed some layups. And, of course, you know, Uros lost his mind. Although, like, I do think there's a clear, you know, upward trend in this team since he started playing well because I do think he brings energy and toughness. And, like, we've talked about leadership on this team and, you know, I'm not calling Uros the leader, but he does at least give us some toughness.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that...
It might be fake toughness. I don't know if we actually want to fight, but...
Oh, I don't... I mean, I think, like, Santiago, Vescovi, and Uros are always, 1,000% of the time, if they are on the basketball floor, they are just as much looking to fight the opponent as they are to put the ball in the hole. Like, Santi is always in the middle of it, just like Uros. They are always looking to fight.
Well, the thing is, like, Santi's able to put the ball in the basket and, like, contribute... No matter what, pretty much. And when Uros is out there just trying to fight and, like, not doing anything for the team, it becomes get your ass on the bench.
Barnes was not, like, I thought Barnes, like, his answer about it last night was, you know, it wasn't very boomer, like, not the poster, but, like, just an old man. He was like, look, like, you know, Uros cannot be doing what he's doing. He's like, he can't do what he did tonight. But, like, they have to play with some emotion and they have to play with some energy. And sometimes, like, they're just going to get technicals and that's okay. But he can't be doing what he was doing tonight. Which it did sound like, it does sound pretty awful.
No, it was bad. It was bad. Like, especially because it's like at a moment where you're down like 8 in the first half and he just shoves the guy in the back. And you're just like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, he's always looking to fight. I mean, I do think that like as cheesy as it sounds, like he has like, there has been a very big change in the team since he's been starting.
It's true. No, I mean, I don't think it's cheesy. I think it's true. And we've been critical, obviously, of him and his playing time.
He's been way better than I ever thought.
Oh, no, for sure. He has earned his stripes and... I don't get mad when I see him on the floor anymore, and he helps the team, and that's a big statement, I think.
You know, last night was the first night that he's been a black hole in the game.
Oh, yeah, and he only played 9 minutes, which I think is a good thing.
And he only played 9 minutes, so if that's going to be the case, like, there's going to be some teams that he just can't go up against, but, like, he did well against LSU. If it's one of those games... And he just doesn't play, then I don't think anybody has a problem with it.
Especially last night wasn't a good matchup. They were doing the five out, and also he was just a little too focused on trying to be a meme and trying to be the tough guy for the crowd. I think he likes being the crowd favorite a little too much last night. So, all in all, good win. We will see what happens on...
It was nice to see Fulkerson, like, he actually did something for once.
He had two huge plays. I mean, he had a huge, like, fading away... bank shot left-handed. I mean, I know he's left-handed, but a huge fadeaway bank shot. And then he got a big and one that maybe shouldn't have been an and one.
Did he walk on that?
No, I just thought like he, like in college, sometimes they don't give you that like continuation. Cause I mean, he kind of got fouled before he went back up with it. And like, it's just a crapshoot in college basketball, But no, he came through clutch. He did. You probably were going to let that game slip away if he hadn't made those two shots.
And if Tennessee's going to win anything, like, I think he has to give you something. I just don't.
He does, and he had a couple of nice tip outs too and rebounds. Like he had good energy. Like I said, I was happy with the way everybody played, except like I said, Urosh and Chandler was a little sloppy, and you know, even Victor Bailey had an offensive rebound. So you know, no real complaints there.
He was our only free throw miss, I believe.
Okay, I was going to say, we did shoot better from the free throw line, so that's promising. Which, by the way, I meant to tell you before the podcast, we did have that question one time about how many free throws I could make out of 100. I did what I said I was going to do. I hit exactly 65.
That's pretty good.
Running around, doing things, and then I would stop and shoot like, you know, 15 or 20, and yeah, I shot 65, hit 65. So it's exactly what I thought I would do. I was not impressed by any means, but just like I was pretty self-aware, I guess, of my skills. Let's get to some patron questions. Patreon.com/ReedsRanch. I don't know if we have any events coming up anytime soon, but you get access to the Discord and the game threads. New $10 patron, Jordan Gregory.
Shout out to Brother Jordan. We love you and appreciate you.
We do. Let's get to some questions. But before we do, I guess it's the one-year anniversary of Josh Heupel being announced.
It is.
It's been a long year. I think we were both pretty hard on Brother Josh. Do you have anything to say to him or to the fans that listen? Have we changed our tune? Are you, like I said, do you have any other takes you want to apologize for or just, you know, own up to? Or
I mean, he was a lot better. Like, we were a lot better football team than I ever would have thought that we would have ever been. So I think that on the field, it went a lot better than pretty much anybody would have guessed. There were some mystifying things like the clock management and the punting, but none more so than starting Joe Milton over Hendon Hooker.
Him being the 14th worst SEC coach, which puts him at dead last in terms of when to go for fourth downs and when to kick in general, is a little problematic. Or a lot problematic.
What's going to cost us? It's going to cost us a game.
I mean, it already cost us two, I would say. I mean, I think it cost you the Ole Miss game, and I think it cost you maybe it didn't cost you the Florida game by any means, but like that game, there are just a couple instances where you just, you know, you should have been a little bit more aggressive on fourth downs, even the Purdue game maybe, but that's problematic. I would hope that he improves with that. Maybe he will whenever our short yardage game works better if we get some better offensive linemen in here. So I'm not going to completely write him off, because when you look at like his career numbers, it was a little bit of an anomaly that he was down, like, you know, basically batting 50%. He's more of a 65% type of guy. So that would be my biggest concern with him. The recruiting, I think overall we probably pleasantly surprised, right, in terms of the high school recruiting. The guys you had in this first class was better than we all thought.
The class ended a lot better than I think anybody thought. I think he still...
Especially without getting Simpson or Nolan.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't think he can recruit nearly well enough. And, like, the portal just has exacerbated the disparity in recruiting to me. I mean, I don't know. The portal has been mystifying to me because I didn't expect to get guys like Eli Ricks and Burton from Georgia that both went to Alabama. I didn't expect to get guys like that. I expected to get the guys that were on the second tier. And we haven't gotten any, but what's more mystifying is that they haven't gone after anyone. They haven't gone after anyone. They've taken a backup.
They went after two guys and taken losses on them with both, you know, Verse and Neer, but outside of that,
like,
yeah.
We've gone after two dudes and an offensive lineman from Florida that we got that was backup offensive lineman.
That we may or may not even wanted. He just showed up and was like, yeah, we're
going to. You know, I think that they're going after this Vandy offensive tackle, but like...
And he was really good, right? He was like a preseason...
Yeah, he's good. He's been all SEC a couple times, like, but it's really weird with him because he's one of these guys that is basically, he's finishing out the semester, right? Because it would be dumb not to. You're at the University of, you know, you're at Vanderbilt University, like, you're a prestigious academic institution. So he's finishing out the semester there, and then he's just going to show up somewhere. So, like, you can't get him right now or whatever. But we think that we're going after him. I mean, they've gone after nobody. They've gone after nobody. And, like, LSU has added, like, 10 dudes in the portal and got another one yesterday. And, you know, why weren't we going after this Oklahoma State cornerback? Why weren't we going after the TCU defensive end? I don't even know where he ended up going. But, like, we've gone after Nayer and Verse, and he missed both. But, like, we haven't gone after anybody. It's just the whole—
We maybe just haven't, like, gotten any, like, headway with them. I mean, that's also possible. That we've gone after him, we just couldn't, like, actually get in the room or get close. I mean, kind of like how we couldn't get Zach Evans to even, like, come to a visit Tennessee.
Yeah. And now, I didn't pay close enough attention to our transfers last year. So, like, I don't know when these guys committed. Like, I don't know when Javonte Payton decided he was going to come to Tennessee. I think that it was, like, pretty late. Like, there's going to be guys this whole spring.
I mean, Joe Milton was, like, the weekend of the Orange and White game. And he was your starting quarterback. So, like, I'm not worried until basically the first week of June. So, I'm not freaking out about that just yet. You have missed. And, like, yes, you are going to have to get a couple of these guys. But I'm not hitting the big red panic button just yet.
But I think he can coach. Like, I think that he can coach offense. Like, and I think that Tim Banks was a good hire on defense.
Definitely better than that Washington guy that we almost got.
I think it was a blessing that Washington turned us down.
He's now out of a job, right?
He's taking another job at Notre Dame.
As what, coordinator or linebackers coach or analyst? Or
I think he's a position coach. I mean, I guess Freeman is going to call a defense. So, I mean, if Washington is the defense coordinator, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I mean, that was like a blessing for Heupel that we missed out on Washington and got Banks, because Banks is good. I feel pretty confident in saying that Banks is good. I think our defensive line is going to be good.
Well, happy anniversary, Josh Heupel.
So, yeah. And the games ain't boring, so there's that. We score some points.
All right, let's get to some patron questions. What do you got for us?
Jackie, a.k.a. the former Law Dog.
Oof, oof, oof.
Has Juroš being an insane Serbian given the team a needed edge, and will it matter?
I think we already talked about that, Law Dog.
I think that it does matter. I think that it will matter. I mean, I think at the very least, Tennessee's, like, better, and that matters. I don't know if it's, like, going to win us a game in the NCAA tournament or whatever, but it's kind of just, I'm laughing at the idea of Juroš winning us a game in the NCAA tournament.
I mean, I think it's all fun and games till he does something really stupid in a big game and we all turn on him.
It is. And so right now we're going to enjoy it for what it is. We're going to enjoy it for what it is.
It's like, you know, I've been waiting, you know, for the Derek Barnett personal foul that was going to, like, cost us. I'm still waiting for it, you know, 5 years later. Although I will say it did happen to the Eagles. I don't know if you saw that playoff game. He got that personal foul against Brady right on the first drive that led to a touchdown. So I've been waiting for that for 6 years. I still remember him dragging that South Carolina quarterback like 3 seconds after the whistle.
I remember that hit he put on that dude in high school that made dead spin. Dude was like 3 yards out of bound and he just took his head off.
It's coming with your Juroš too. It's coming. Just wait for it. He is going to do something really stupid and get a really dumb foul. Probably going to be a flagrant or intentional foul that gives him 2 shots in the ball back.
He has to dial it back some.
I'm sure Barnes is telling him that. I would imagine Papa Barnes has set him down. But yes, to answer your question, Juroš, he is providing an edge, and it does matter. Because I don't feel like this team is a bunch of pussies anymore, so that's good. They got some fight to them.
No. Yeah. I agree. I think there's a lot of things you can say about this team, but I don't think you can say they ain't tough. I think they're willing to get down in the mud and, like, get filthy.
They are, 100%. Every time there's a loose ball, you do have 4 or 5 guys willing to get on the ground. I will say that about them. Will it matter in the tournament? I don't know. But it's good for, like, the regular season games on a 6 o'clock tip where you have to kind of muster some energy out, because that 6 o'clock tip was dumb as hell.
Yeah. It's very odd that we tipped that early. I mean, like,
I don't know what was on ESPN2 that we couldn't avoid an hour for. I don't know. Especially, like, were we trying to get an advantage over Florida who had to play on Monday? Like, I mean, that was kind of weird. You think they'd need the extra hour.
Yeah, I know. It was just was very odd. I mean, I think there's like a Nebraska tipped. Nebraska just tipped off.
I was gonna say, there's been some games that's been tipping off at like at 3 o'clock and like 2 o'clock. Like basketball, I don't know if they're trying to just grab some of like the midday gambling people who will watch anything. I mean, it was nice. Like if I wasn't a Tennessee fan and lived in like Knoxville, I would love like a 6 o'clock tip. You know, get it over with. It'd be nice to have like a big brand on TV. Like I didn't mind it at all. Like since I didn't go to the game, but yeah, very strange. Low energy at the start.
Brother Taylor M, is this season a failure if no Sweet 16 appearances? If no Sweet 16 appearance. No.
So is this season a failure just if we don't make the Sweet 16? I mean, we're not going to win the SEC. I mean, I think that's fair to say, right? Like, I don't think we're going to catch Auburn. We might, but I don't think so.
I mean, if they were to win the SEC tournament.
Sure. I mean, sure. If they were able to do that or even make the championship game, like, if Tennessee, like let's just say hypothetically, if Tennessee won every one of their remaining games, won the SEC tournament, and then lost in the second round, that would really, really suck, but I wouldn't call the season a failure. You know what I mean? So, like, let's just say Tennessee, they're what? Would you say they were 14-5? Let's say they go, you know, they lose 7 games. They lose 3 more games in the regular season, then win the SEC tournament. Like, I still think that's a pretty successful season.
I agree.
It's going to suck because we know, like, Rick Barnes, we're still got the questions that he can't win in the tournament.
Yeah. It's just going to cement what we think about Rick Barnes.
I would actually be impressed, like, if they were able to, like, go on a run here in the regular season. I'd probably come out with Rick Barnes, like, being a little bit impressed with him if they were able to do that.
Yeah.
Now, flip side, like, if Tennessee, you know, just plays, you know, 700 ball and has, like, 7 or 8 losses total and then able to make the Sweet 16, yes, that would be a success. So, I see the premise of the question for sure.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I'm not done with this team right now because I was very close to being checked out.
I agree completely, 100%.
So, like, credit to them after the Kentucky game for sacking up and being ready to, like, you know, actually, like, get down to work and play tough and grind out some victories. Because even if they lost that Vanderbilt game, like, if Scottie Pippen Jr. hadn't lost his fucking mind.
That was an all-timer.
And for some reason fouled down 2 with 50 seconds left and then threw up a corner 3 off the top of the backboard. We might have lost that Vanderbilt game. Then we'd have been, you know, obviously like DEFCON 5 or DEFCON 1, I guess. Excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah. Brother Ryan Shannon, what is your favorite memory of Jordan Howe?
I mean,
I think him guarding Derrick Rose.
Did he actually get acknowledged last night at center court?
I think Lamonte Turner did, right?
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know. Okay.
But I don't know what.
Can we get if anybody knows what we're talking about, can somebody like update us? Because I don't know what's happening.
Oh, they both did. They both did.
Oh, okay. Okay. That shooting slump Jordan Howe went in was so sad.
It was sad. He couldn't hit anything.
I don't really remember any of his good plays either, of this far removed. All I remember is the shooting slump. I remember, like, when me and Skylar McBee did a radio show in, like, 2015, we interviewed Jordan. He was nice. So I guess that's my favorite memory of him.
Yeah. I was so, like, he's from North Alabama, too, like, 10 minutes from where I grew up, and he was Mr. Basketball in the state of Alabama. Like, I was so excited when he was coming to Tennessee. I was so excited. But, yeah, him guarding Derrick Rose in the 1-versus-2 game, that was cool. You know, him matching up against D. Rose in a number 1 versus number 2 game was pretty nice.
Sophomore year, saw it 39.5% from 3.
He did have very long shorts. He had extremely long shorts. They were absurd.
Junior year, 34.6% from 3. And then, yeah, his last year, 31.9% from 3. Could not hit anything. And that, it was even, you know, compounded because obviously Lofton was dealing with, and he couldn't hit anything either. And it was just like we were supposed to have such good shooting, and we just couldn't do it anymore. This is brutal. Oh my God, this is even worse than I remember. Looking at the game log, like he shot 30%, but that was with like a couple of like really good games sprinkled at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Let me just read. This is starting like basically February 5th. 0-2, 0-4, 1-4, 1-2, 0-3, 0-2, 0-2, 0-1, 1-2, 0-3, 0-2, 0-4, 0-2. My God. He hit like 1-3 the last 10 games of the season. Like 1-14 to end his career. Did score 1 point in the win against Butler, though. It does not look like he played against Louisville. What's your favorite Lamonte memory?
The Kentucky, well, I can't say the Kentucky three because there were two of them. I think the SEC tournament.
Yeah, the Kentucky three. I get that one.
But the one that he hit in Rupp was just so, I mean, it was just such a, like him just at the top of the key, just dribbling and then just pulling up.
Yeah. Yeah, that was wild.
That was that game at Rupp. I mean, that was one of the most fun UT basketball games. I mean, I can remember just like sitting on the couch and just screaming in like elation when Admiral got that run out fast break that he slammed. Like, that was one of the most, I mean, that was just winning at Rupp. It just, winning at Rupp is so amazing. Winning at Rupp is so amazing.
Yeah, especially against a good Kentucky team.
Yeah, especially against a good Kentucky team. I mean,
when you're a good basketball team too, and it's like, you know, two good teams going head to head.
Yeah, that was just an awesome game. But yeah, I still think the SEC tournament, like that, just whole that those last 3 minutes of that game, Grant.
You played a perfect. You basically played a perfect like 2:48 to end the game.
I remember yelling like a madman. I was yelling like a caveman in my parents' living room.
I was there
when we came back and won, just going crazy. I mean, it was that pass by Admiral. I mean, you know, those guys gave us a lot of fun basketball to watch.
God, and then we got our ass kicked by Auburn. Honorable mention to Lamonte hitting that game winner against VCU on YouTube/Facebook, whatever channel they put that on.
There was that. Yeah. Him and Jordan Bowden played really well against Washington and Canada that one time. Yeah.
Worst memory would be him shooting that really early three against LSU that we then lost because we got a foul on the rebound.
Yeah.
That would be my worst Lamonte memory.
What was that referee's name? Anthony Jordan?
Yeah, and then we found out that guy was like an LSU fan. So that was, that was
they didn't let him call any more SEC games the rest of that year.
That actually was a pretty good memory all in all. Like, I mean, like the loss sucked, but like we did have some good content come out of it.
Yeah, I remember like Dan Wolkin calling Tennessee fans crazy about the whole thing, and it was like, no, we weren't. Like, we were correct. Like, he did not call, at the very least, he did not call another LSU game the rest of the year. Like, the SEC didn't go public with their punishment. But we were right.
Did we think it wasn't a foul? Is that what we were mad about?
It was the whole game. It was the entire game.
Yeah, okay, because I was going to say, that last play seemed like a foul, like, whenever I rewatch it now, but, like,
it was the entire game.
Shouldn't be allowed to be calling the game, obviously.
I remember, like, I broke my laptop that game. I broke my laptop. And it might have been over that play. I just remember I was on Discord and just slamming my laptop shut so hard that it broke. And just leaving my parents' house, like, without a word. Just getting up and leaving, as I have done very often due to UT athletic events. But, yeah. And I love Lamonte. Love Lamonte.
I hate that it ended the way it did.
I did, too. Sad. He deserved better.
He did. Any other questions?
Brother Blue Moon Ball would like us to, pray for him and keep him in our thoughts and prayers as he
to lift him up. We need our prayer warriors to lift him up.
Brother Blue Moon Ball is being snipped tomorrow as the nation in unison, the entire nation in unison, is wailing and gnashing teeth that the bloodline is ended. Blue Moon Vol will
have
no more children.
He has two children. The bloodline.
But he will have
ended.
No more. If anyone's quiver needs to be full, if anyone needs to populate the earth like Genghis Khan did with his progeny and his genetic footprint, it's Jimmy Buffett's super fan.
Me and him have a
date.
Brother
Blue Moon Vol.
Me and him have a date in May to go to Cincinnati to watch Jimmy Buffett together. But you are correct, especially for a nation that, you know, I always see that we're never going to win a war again because of our generation getting too soft. We could end that if we, like you said, let BMV spread a seed like Genghis Khan. But
I mean, it needs to be just thrown out there on the wind and let it be taken. I mean, just, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, he would be an amazing sperm donor. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying about Jimmy Buffett superfan, a.k.a. Brother Blue Moon Ball. who has, I guess, gotten over his Colts. He's gotten over his Colts in that game against Jacksonville. So, you know, good luck tomorrow. Good luck tomorrow, BMV.
I mean, I've never had a vasectomy. I guess with technology these days, it's not that scary, but I guess I'd still be a little scared. So good luck, BMV. I hope he's healed by the time we go see Jimmy Buffett.
It'd be funny if he had to like go to that game with like a catheter. Go to that concert with like a catheter because they screw it up. So
no, that wouldn't be funny. That's bad. Producer, cut that out.
Producer, it'd be bad.
Producer, delete that.
I love Blumenthal. Blumenthal, his sister is a great woman, and so is his brother-in-law, brother Tropio. Great people, a great family. It's sad that there won't be more of them as he prepares to get snipped tomorrow.
Next question,
brother Richmond asks: can we get an NBA quiz?
Are you paying attention to the NBA right now?
I know the Grizzlies are good. Because best friend Luke has started watching them more.
Okay. Yeah, the Grizzlies are pretty good right now. 33-17. I believe that is good for, what, third place in the West? It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I will say I appreciate the Hawks for getting on a winning streak right after my football season ended. So they've won 5 in a row to at least soften the blow. We've been struggling, but we're playing a little bit better. So that's going okay. Let's see. I'm looking at the standings right now. Who do I want to ask you? Let's go with the champions from a couple years ago. I want to see how many. Actually, no, I'm going to go with the hot team. Let's go with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are hot right now. Have we done Cleveland recently?
I don't believe so.
Let's go with Cleveland, who are very impressive, Seth. 30-19. 3 seed in the East right now.
Go ahead.
I'm going to set the over-under at... I know you already got Darius Garland, so I'm going to set the over-under at 5.5. Let's see what you got.
Well, Garland, one, I believe he's their best player, right?
Does seem to be, right now at least, yes.
And I guess their second best player is probably Kevin Love.
He has been really good recently.
I think that I know that Colin Sexton's on the team, but I think he's hurt.
He is hurt, but I'll give you credit for that. I was equating that into the 5.5.
Tristan Thompson?
No, there's one strike. Tristan Thompson plays for the Sacramento Kings, I believe.
Okay.
Traded from, I believe, Cleveland. Actually, he played with the Celtics last year, and then they traded him to the Hawks for a day, and then we traded him to Sacramento for DeLon Wright. So, yeah, I know he's just now focused on cheating on Chloe. He got caught again. He tried to deny his baby, and then the paternity test came back positive, so he had to own up to it.
So who else do they have? Let me think here.
You got 3 with 1 strike. This is the 3 seed in the East, Seth. This might be the 1 seed, but when it's all said and done. They have a very easy schedule, and they are really, really good right now.
So Garland is a second-year player, right?
I want to say Garland might be in year 3 by now.
Okay, he's year 3. Okay, so who else have they
got? Yeah, he's in year 3 right now. Oh, that's embarrassing. 3 seed.
Who else have they drafted?
I thought you were going to get last year's draft pick.
I'm trying to think. It's not that really tall white guy from Australia. He plays for the Thunder, right?
That is correct. Do you know his name? Because that wasn't going to do you any good.
No, I don't know. I don't know that dude's name. I just know he plays for the Thunder.
He does. You are correct.
I want to say they drafted like a yet another guard. No, they Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley.
Okay, there's 4.
They drafted Mobley. That's right. Okay.
You sound done. You done?
Yeah, I'm done. I don't have a clue.
Jared Allen. Yeah.
The dude with the afro?
Yep. They got him last year. Oh, been a throw
in for the Magic. I thought he played for the Magic.
No, that's Mo Bamba, I guess. I don't know who the hell you're talking about.
I don't either.
Seti Osman's been there since the LeBron days. He's still holding it down.
Who?
Oh, Seti Osman, white European guy. Isaac Okoro from Auburn.
Oh, I did know that one.
Rajon Rondo's there now. Ricky Rubio, who's also hurt. Okay, well, let's end the show. gave us a good hour. Appreciate you, Seth. I love you.
I love you as well.
Love the patrons. Appreciate you guys. Are you okay? You've been coughing for like three weeks straight now.
It's long COVID. I had to go back to the doctor this morning for a cough syrup.
For long COVID, really?
I don't know what it is. I have not been able to stop coughing since I had it.
Is that the only side effect you have?
Yeah. It didn't even really start until I was on the tail end of COVID. Even start until then. It's like when I had COVID, when I was in the throes of COVID and battling back and forth, I didn't even have a cough. I was severely nauseous.
I thought this strain was supposed to be easy. I think I'm not positive I had it, but like I just got a headache, so I thought that was it. Like after the Music City Bowl.
Yeah, I haven't been able to stop coughing. I've gone through so much cough syrup, prescribed and over the counter. She gave me a steroid, an antibiotic, and more cough syrup this Damn. Morning. She just threw in the kitchen sink at it.
Boy, get your ass.
Maybe it's just a working cough. I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Well, I love you. I'll talk to you later. Feel better, my friend.
Thank you. Later.
See ya.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's gone.
Take Is it doing
fuck
the spiel?
These niggas up.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the street cause I'ma wiping nose. I'ma get you gone. 22 for this inside again, it's stupid strong. I just sit up trap like it's home alone. We got lots of scraps, I double tap to get you gone. Still remember when the fizz ran in my Memphis home. Heard my line tap, I switched up T-Mobile phones. They ran in the sleeping spot, bitch, that's the wrong home. Cub popped the beam backwards, eyes look like honeycomb. And I got mob ties like I'm honeycomb. And I got mob ties like I'm Al Capone. These niggas McDonald's fries $1 just to get them gone. You know I'm a slider. Bitch, I'm sending dreads, turn all my niggas into riders. Fell in love with the grapes, I guess I turned into a baller. Face, I leave them no ID, like restricted callers. Really, don't beef on the internet, I leave it to the bloggers. 2014, I was banging, set a 40 in my jog. I swear them niggas didn't want to see me in that parlor. I'm crib, niggas. This the life I chose. Call me Clintus in the street, cause I'ma wipe your nose. I'ma get you gone. 22 for this. Inside again, it's stupid strong. I just sit up trap like it's home alone. This the life I chose. Call me Clintus in the street, cause I'ma wipe your nose. I'ma get you gone. 22 for this inside again, it's stupid strong. I just sit up trap like it's home alone.